Today we have a wonderful treat. Victoria Kading, who is the founder and director of NADET, which stands for Namib Desert Environmental Education Trust, is with us today. I follow the admirable tradition set by my predecessor of very short introductions of our speakers. You came to hear her, not me, talk about her. But perhaps I might say just a word or two about why the Center for Great Plains Studies is hosting someone from Namibia. Namibia is a semi-arid grassland the size of Texas and Oklahoma combined, with a population the size of Nebraska's. That is a large, dry, sparsely populated region. Sound familiar? Most of the people there are engaged in some form of cattle raising or maybe goat raising. Does that sound familiar? Much of the land mass is privately owned. Does that sound familiar? Also, it's been spectacularly successful in preserving its biodiversity and wildlife. No, that doesn't sound too familiar. Namibia has learned how to use ecotourism to promote conservation, and it's been spectacularly successful, and that's one of the ideas that we're trying to get started in the Great Plains as a way of promoting conservation here. Victoria Kading founded and built NADET, which she will tell you about. There is a short bio on your chairs if you're interested in reading or hearing more about her. I visited NADET twice, and I have to say it's an amazing place. It's a testament to what one person can do when she has vision and she mobilizes a team around her to realize that vision. Now, when I say Victoria built NADET, I'm using that term in the same way that Donald Trump does when he says he built the Trump Tower. For the actual building, I understand that the credit must go to Victoria's husband, Andreas, who is here with us today as well. Sitting with him are their two lovely daughters, Alexandra and Marlena. The title of today's Victoria's talk today is, as you can see, Teaching Sustainability in Namibia. Victoria, welcome.
Thank you very much, Rick, for the wonderful introduction, and thank you for having us here at the center today. So I will get started, and Rick has already talked a little bit about what Namibia is like. I think another thing that's very important to mention is the fact that Namibia has now celebrated 25 years of independence, and we have elected our third president. And so it is a democracy in Africa surrounded by countries that are not democratic or are not practicing democracy the way that Americans understand it. And this is something to be very proud of. It's also a country that is dependent on mining, fishing, agriculture, and tourism, as already been mentioned. It is the agricultural sector that actually provides the most jobs. But unfortunately, Namibia inherited an apartheid system from the previous South African regime and from colonialism. And therefore, there is very high income inequality. It's actually number 4 or number 5 in the world. And just being back in the United States the last 2 weeks since we've been here, I've realized that this topic of inequality is something that, when I used to live here, was not an issue, and now it's become an issue. And Namibia has been living with it for a long time. So a lot of the things that we are talking about today is a result of this inequality. And therefore, also 40% of Namibians, they actually practice subsistence agriculture. I think another important fact, which Rick also pointed out, is we have a very low population, but also the density and where those people live. So in the northern part of the country is where the majority of the people actually live. And NADET is in the very southern part, where we really have almost no people. And the picture of the two girls, they are wearing their traditional Nama outfits, which is a Klik language, and there are over 11 different local languages and dialects. But English is the official language, and Afrikaans, the former colonial language and apartheid language, is the lingua franca. So if we have children that come to our center, which I will tell you about, when they go out of the classroom or go and play in their free time, most of the time they are speaking Afrikaans. Another very important fact about Namibia is the fact that we have over 300 days of sunshine. And we only have two permanent rivers, perennial rivers, and they are on our borders. And the river that I've posted there is actually an ephemeral river, and only if we are lucky does this river actually flow. And we have very low rainfall and high evaporation, and that gives us a water deficit. So with all of this in mind, it's amazing that the Namibian government has also recognized the importance of conservation, and now 43% of the total land is actually being protected. And again, as Rick pointed out, it is being protected not because the government has taken the land and made it into a national park, but because there is a whole system of interconnected conservation areas. So if you look at the map, then you can see that actually all of the green parts, those are the national parks protected by government. But huge areas of land that are orange, purple, the gray, those are all areas of land that are protected by people. So government has given enabling policies, which I won't get into today, but if you would like to Google it, given enabling policies that really allow people to conserve the land. One of these places is the Numa Brent Nature Reserve, which is a privately owned nature reserve that's made up of now 17 former livestock farms. And Nadit lies in the heart of this nature reserve. So you can see that we are really in the middle of nowhere, lying nestled in a dune valley. And this is where our center is. And we are officially a concessionaire of the Numa Brent Nature Reserve. So Numa Brent operates using ecotourism. They gain income from the lodges that are there. And through that, they are also enabled to allow us to operate from Numa Brent free of charge. And so we do not need to pay any park fees and can operate in this beautiful nature reserve. So coming to Nadit, we are a nonprofit organization, and our aim is to protect the natural environment of Namibia by educating its citizens to practice a sustainable lifestyle. We have four different program levels that we offer. Primary school, as we call it, or elementary school. The youngest children that come to our center are usually about 10 to 11 years old. Secondary school, community groups, so these are any members of the community, as well as educator groups. And educator, I mean a very wide term. It could be the people that are posted there, or Ministry of Youth field officers. It could be teachers from a school, anybody that's involved in the profession of education. And we're very proud of the fact that 2 years ago we celebrated our 10th anniversary, and since then we've had over 10,000 participants come to our center. So where do these people come from? They come from the Hardap region mostly. That's the region that we are in. And this map again shows you how sparsely populated we are. The blue dot is where Nadit is. And there are roads actually that go there, but the Ministry of Education of Namibia decided to leave out those roads because there are no schools and no more communities in that area. So all of the other places on the map are schools in our region. We have 50 schools. And the two pictures below actually are very typical photographs of what settlements and this area look like. And I say the word settlements because only two of the places are officially towns, and then I think there's maybe three places that are then villages, and everything else is just classified as a settlement. And I think it's also important to talk about why are we actually there? What is the importance of having a place like Nadit, besides, of course, giving the opportunity to come to the most beautiful desert in the world, the Namib. But it's also because the people living in the Hardap region and in the rest of Namibia, they're faced with many challenges. Again, coming back to the income inequality. So the majority of Namibians do not have access to electricity. They would never be sitting in a hall like this with air conditioning, lights, projectors. This is just something that would be in the capital city in one place. That's it. And so the majority of people, they depend on firewood for their daily energy needs, be it for cooking, heating water, staying warm in the wintertime. The photograph below of the donkey carts, that is not a tourist attraction. It is a normal method of travel in the Hardap region. Another major concern, as I mentioned, was water. The woman at the top, she's standing next to her water supply. So she does not have running water in her house, nor is there a tap on her property. Those buckets are filled with water that she collected from the tap, which is on the right. That's a communal water collection point where you need to walk another 2 or 3 kilometers to first go to the village council in order to buy a water coupon. And then the water coupon you can then put into this tap and then fill the buckets of water. What amazes me is that even though it's so difficult to do all of that, there's still water that's wasted around that tap, either because the tap doesn't work very well or because water overflows or because there are no containers. And on the bottom is a typical photograph of a broken water pipe, which unfortunately is one of the main problems, and I should have added that to our water deficit, is once people do have access to water, the maintenance of things is very, very poor. Waste is something that is growing in Namibia, a country that is becoming more and more developed. There's more access to things, but unfortunately we don't think enough about when we have shops and plastic bags and things to buy that we also need a place where we can throw them away. And the majority of people actually just don't even have a place to throw it away. So the normal thing to do in Namibia is that you actually burn your rubbish in your backyard or in your front yard. And some people don't bother and just leave it. So all of these topics, energy, water, waste, these are the main topics that we're talking about at NADEET in the context of our biodiversity and conserving our environment. And that is where NADEET aims to be a model of sustainable living. So one of the main things we would like to do is just give people an opportunity to see what is it like to live in a way that's more sustainable. This doesn't mean that it has to be expensive or fancy or cost a lot of money. It just needs to be something that is improving the way that we live and, of course, at the same time, improving our environment. So our main philosophy at NADEET is that we practice what we teach. When I started NADEET Center, the vision that Rick spoke about actually came from the fact that I had been teaching at another environmental education center. When I first came to Namibia, I was 22 years old. And I was put at a center as a volunteer, actually with another member of the audience here. And I was told to teach about wildlife. I taught about cheetahs and leopards. And at the end of the day, after teaching all these things about animals and they got to see the animals, we would, as typical, we would make a campfire. And we would, in Namibia, we call it, we braai our food. So we'd have a good old-fashioned barbecue. And that's what you do in Namibia. But one day, after several years, one of the children that was at the center, a teenager actually, a 15-year-old boy, he came up to me and he said, "Miss, are you not concerned about deforestation?" And it was the biggest aha moment of my life because I realized I am wasting my time standing here teaching and coming up all these fun, interactive activities when at the end of the day, the center that we were at was showing that it is fine to say one thing and to do another thing. And I started looking around and I realized all the environmental education centers were doing this. They were teaching about their particular subject matter, but they were doing it in a way that was the normal way of living. And unfortunately, the normal way of living is not environmentally sustainable. So I realized that when we do something, we need to do it in an environmental way. And that's why I have this little pie chart up here. And the pie chart really is to show that in a normal 24-hour day, let's say now you're at a NADEET center or you're a student at university, hopefully you're spending 8 hours sleeping. Hopefully you then have 8 hours of what I call formal learning. You go to a lecture, you have a class, you maybe attend a lab session, or maybe you have a job, you know, the things that you are doing during your normal formal hours. But there are 8 hours of the day, and you can count it up for yourself, where you are doing things like taking a shower, using a toilet, washing the dishes, throwing something away, SMSing someone or texting someone, as it's called in the States. We call it SMSing. All of these things that are on the side, and being entertained, going and hanging out with your friends. And it's these hours of the day that I believe influence us the most in how we actually live and the decisions that we make about the way that we live. Simple things. You know, do we take a plastic bag at the supermarket, or do we take a cloth bag? You know, what kind of food do we buy? What do we eat? Where do we go shopping? All of these things impact the energy, water, and waste of our natural environment, if we can see it or not. And all of that will slowly impact how much corn we need to grow in the Nebraska farmlands, or in Namibia, how much space we need for other things. So this is the foundation of our program. And so our center, as you can see here, tries to integrate this idea into everything that we do. So not only are we teaching about sustainability, but we are practicing it. So if we go on a little bit of a tour of the center, I would love to have you all come and see it yourself. But these are the houses that we have built. My husband has built all of these together with a small team of people. The first time we built Nadit Center, we actually built it with hand tools, hand screwdrivers, and it cost us something like $10,000 to $15,000. This is our second version, because the first version, after 10 years, needed to be upgraded. But these are our houses. They have little mattresses and bunk beds inside, and they can sleep 6 to 8 students at a time. We call them our sustainable living teams, instead of just saying this is your group, because they need to work together, because they are each given an allocation of water. So every team is given 150 liters of water for the week, and this is not for drinking, but this is for showering and brushing your teeth and the things that you would normally do in the bathroom. And the girl on the right, she's pouring the water that she got out of a solar hot water heater into a bucket, and there she can then take a bucket shower. So there's actually a shower head underneath there, which works just as well as any other shower and limits her bucket to about 3 gallons, 2 to 3 gallons. And as you can see, in total, we're using 4 gallons a day, and that's possible because we have dry toilets. So obviously in a desert environment, it's very easy to set up a system like this, but the tri-toilet system that we have inside that house, there are 2 toilets, so one on each side, and underneath each of those toilets is actually 2 chambers. So one chamber is full, we will then move the toilet pot to the other chamber. It is amazing, but after all of our programs are Mondays to Fridays, I didn't mention that before, there are residential programs, so at the end of a week, there's 3 nights where the toilets can rest, and by the time Monday morning comes around and our next group of participants arrive, you cannot smell anything. Also, you can see we've tried to integrate recycling as much as possible, even into the place like a toilet. All of Nadit Center's energy is powered through solar. We live very far away from the national power grid. Our other choice would be to use a diesel generator, which doesn't sound very attractive. So instead we have a solar, we call this the solar park. Underneath here there's also information about our center, but there are 25 solar panels altogether, and they each are producing 100 watts of electricity. In the top right, there's a very small picture of our solar hot water heaters. So we heat water separately, and while nobody was noticing, a little steenbok was even trying to get some of that water. We then use solar energy directly to cook our food. And this is also very important, because instead of taking solar energy, converting it into electricity, and then reusing it again to heat our food, we actually use our 300 plus days of sunshine and cook our food using solar cookers. So we use parabolic solar cookers, as well as these solar ovens. A lot of people say it's not possible, it cannot work. Well, we've fed over 10,000 people for the last 10 years, 3 meals a day, and all of it, unless it's rained on that day, has been solar cooked. It is very possible, and we have up to 50 people that we are serving at one time. And it's possible because, as you can see at the bottom, the kids are actually doing it, or the members of the community who've come to our center are doing it. So we don't have a cafeteria which is far and hidden and you cannot see what's going on. Actually, it's the participants themselves that are doing the cooking, because that's part of the program. And then we come to waste. So we, in Namibia, luckily, we can now recycle in Windhoek, which is 500 kilometers from our center. So we collect all of our tin and glass and our plastics, and those things we then, whenever we do have an empty trip going out, we can bring to this recycling center. But the paper we try to recycle on site, and with that we are actually making these recycled fire bricks. We do a lot of reusing as much as possible. I've also heard the word repurpose. That's also a new word that wasn't around when I left the States over 20 years ago, or 20 years ago. But we are also doing this whole idea of repurposing. But I think one of the biggest messages that we need to send is also to just reduce the waste. Just don't take it in the first place. Then we don't need to repurpose it or recycle it or reuse it or anything. We can just reduce. And all of this takes place within our learning environment, which is the beautiful Namib Desert. So all of this stuff that I've talked about now, it seems very complicated that we do this and that, but actually it's a very natural flow for the participants that come to the center. And what they can focus on is actually the environment that they are living in. And one of the main things we do is spend as much time as possible doing dune walks and exploring and investigating what can they find in nature. And one of those things that you can find in the Namib Desert, which is apparently the world's oldest desert, is a tuktuki beetle. It's actually a tenebrionide beetle. Other people call it darkling beetles. But in Namibia, we call it a tuktuki beetle. This little beetle, there's one of the species, it knocks its back onto the ground, and it sounds tuk, 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 and it's male beetles that are searching for their females. This particular beetle that you look at here is a waxy tuktuki, and it's adapted to the desert by whenever it's hot, it grows a waxy white layer. So right now, that waxy layer is about halfway, so it could become much wider. And when it's cold, and it is cold in the desert, right? I'm sure in Nebraska it also gets very cold. We sometimes have, you know, under freezing temperatures. Then these tuktuki beetles don't want to be white. They don't want to reflect the sunlight. They would like to be black. And so then the wax becomes less, and the black absorbs the sunlight, and then they can start moving faster, and they don't get eaten by the birds. And so these same principles of absorption and reflection are what the little boys at the top are using in order to understand how solar cooking works. So by learning from the environment, we can apply it to simple solutions to our everyday needs. Another example is the oryx. Oryx gazella, which is very common on the Namib Brent Nature Reserve, also is a very specially adapted desert creature, which has the ability to cool down its blood before it goes to the brain. This allows it to tolerate higher temperatures, and this is something, again, that children learn about on the dune walk as they study the wildlife and the biodiversity, and then they can apply it for themselves as to why it's important to also conserve their energy at certain times of the day and also to conserve water. The beetle at the top is a dung beetle. In Namibia, there are many different species of dung beetles, and I put in the picture at the bottom because this is Stipogrossus ciliata, and it's one of the beautiful grasses we do have growing in the desert. We've had good rain in the desert for about the last 12 to 13 years. Before we built Nadit, actually the people who helped develop it the first time, they said to us, don't worry about it, it doesn't rain in the desert. So our first center, for example, didn't have real roofs. We just had these shade cloth roofs. And the second year we had Nadit, we already had rainfall that was way above average, and we've actually had way above average rainfall for a long time now. So in other years, you could come and not see any grass. If you were to come today, you would not have any of those spaces that you can see between the grasses. But this dung beetle is also recycling the grasses, the seeds that fall to the ground, and again, the kids learn from that and also learn how to recycle. I think a very important element of all of this is for us to reflect and be able to monitor what we are doing. So we've installed a very simple environmental audit into our program, which we call the environmental footprint. And all of the time, the kids are measuring how much water they use, how much waste do they produce, how much energy do they use. And so we've been able to, by doing this, we've also are monitoring ourselves. And it takes me back to the story that I told you about the boy who said to me, but don't you care about deforestation? And so you can see at Nadit Center, from cooking, instead of having that nice barbecue at the end of the day, by cooking all of our food on solar cookers, we only produce 55 kilograms of CO2 per year, which is really, it's nothing, compared to the previous center, for example, where I worked, if I had done, again, open fires and barbecues, we would produce 10 times as much. And this just shows how very simple changes actually start to make a difference, and that every one of us who makes a change, it will add up and it does make a difference. It's also very important, obviously, at the end of the day, for kids just to have the opportunity to use and explore the Namib Desert. I showed you the map before at the beginning where everybody lives. The Namib Desert is actually a place where, in the sand dunes where Nadit is located, very few people actually live there. There are some privately owned farms that do have sand dunes, or it's national park. So for the kids to come to Nadit, it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for them to see their country's namesake. The other thing that's very important in Namibia is to celebrate Namibian culture and singing and dancing. So I thought we would let the kids perform. I know the sound quality is not very good, but that's not rehearsed. The kids just do it all the time. It's just part of what they do. And also at the end of the day, after a really long day of learning and having fun at Nadit, one of the things that's also very special about our area is that we are part of the Namibrent Nature Reserve. We are the educational core of Africa's first international dark sky reserve. The IDA is an organization based in Arizona, I believe, and they gave us the certification now 4 years ago. And the dark skies, actually, this photograph could never do it justice, but the dark skies are part of our heritage, and they're part of the conservation of the land. The sky is a big part of that. And I know Nebraska also prides itself on its skies, which it should. So after all of the week at being at Nadit, it's very important to our original mission is that people actually live a different lifestyle and don't just come to Nadit and say, hey, I had a great time, and then go home and go back to the way that they always lived. Do I expect people to revolutionize the way that they live? No. But do I expect people to do something different, to take home some message that they can apply? Yes. And so we are also busy trying to help people to implement sustainability. As I mentioned before, the inequality, the distances to getting to places, the access to things is very challenging. So one of our additional projects is to basically try to help people. So in these photos, we've distributed over 1,200 pieces of sustainable living equipment. So that could be solar cookers or those fuel-efficient stoves, solar ovens, solar lights, all kinds of things that enable people to live sustainably when they come home. We also want to stay connected to people that come to our center. The magazine on the right, it's called the Bush Telegraph. This magazine, actually, I've been writing it since 2001, even before I started Nadit. So we've been going for 14 years already. And we produce 2 issues a year, and we distribute 20,000 copies in Namibia. It is free of charge. It would be impossible to try to collect money in Namibia the way that people can collect money here in the States. But to give you an idea of what 20,000 copies is, the Namibian national newspaper has a print run of 40,000. So we are half the print run of the national newspaper. On the left are booklets that we are also writing. These are It's Time 2 booklets. So again, after being at Nadit or while being at Nadit, participants get these booklets to help them learn and to also remind themselves of what they've learned at Nadit. Nadit is also quite well connected, especially within UNESCO. We've been identified as one of the projects that is leading the way in education for sustainable development. We always talk environmental education. Well, anyone who's in the education academic field will know that there's lots of debate about, is it environmental education or in education for sustainable development? For me, it's not that important what it's called. It's just that people are doing it. So we are part of a new network called the Global Action Program on Education for Sustainable Development. And we are also connected to many other organizations in order to enable us to do our work better. As I just mentioned, I think the biggest challenge that we have at NADEET and that we have in Namibia is access. And it's not just being able to say, okay, well, let's just build this or have this. It's also the distances that we are talking about. I mentioned Windhoek is 500 kilometers. Now I haven't practiced my miles yet.
300 miles.
So it's 300 miles, and you also in Nebraska do know long distances and driving. So if you live in our closest town away, which is, let's say, about 50, 60 miles from NADEET, from that town or that settlement to Windhoek, there is no form of transport. So you have to hitchhike, or you have to own a car. But most of the people don't own a car. So a lot of the access, and only 200, 300, 400 people live in these settlements. So there is no reason for business people to actually go and set up a business there to sell items because you don't have enough people who can buy it. Out of those 400 people who could potentially buy your product, only about 50 of them have the money to buy it. So by the time you've gotten there, sold 50 things to those people, you've spent all your money that you just spent on gas to get there. So part of the access problem, and we have this challenge as well, so we are very grateful to the Ministry of Education in Namibia that is providing a bus for all of the children that come to our center. But the children that come to our center, they just also come from families that do not have the money to pay for what we offer them. Only about 20% of the actual cost of the program is paid for by the participants who come. And so these are things that we are working on to try to overcome all the time. And one of the big successes for our organization is our staff. And unfortunately, not everybody could come. This photograph has about 3 or 4 staff members that are revolving all the time as they are volunteers or interns. They could be Namibian or from overseas. And then we have about 7 to 8 people that are full-time employed with us. Everything from people who are running our solar cooking kitchen up to educators and people working out in communities. And I think really one of the most important people to speak again for NADEET are the participants that come there. So let's hear what she has to say. I didn't pay her to say that.
But you should have.
Now I can give her royalties. Yeah, and I think the other thing that I wanted to show you also, as we are traveling the States and my family is with me, this is a photograph that is right in front of our house at NADEET, literally out the front door. And Alexandra, this is about 5 years ago, so Alexandra was 3 years old. And for her, it's totally natural to just run out in front of the house, as kids would do here, and to look at what's growing in the garden, which here happens to be a false ink cap that only comes out after the rain. And of course, Marlena, who was 1 year old at this time, wants to see what is her big sister doing and runs after her. And neither one of them are paying any attention to the fact that there is an oryx standing right there. And that our little dog, Jilly, is barking at the oryx to try to, protect the girls, which is not really necessary because it's not a danger. But this is the norm for my children. It is normal to be part of nature and to look at what is around you and to investigate what it is. And that is what NADEET is trying to achieve. We want to make being part of nature, taking care of our environment, taking care of ourselves, the norm. It should be the status quo. And with that, I say thank you.
We have some time for questions or comments.
How do you connect with the students through the schools that you mentioned in this and this in these other areas? How do they know to come to you, or how
yeah.
do you connect with them?
Could you repeat the question, sir?
The question is, how do the schools know how to come to Nadit? So when we first built Nadit Center, actually, I had a lot of schools that came with me from my previous center, because I told them I'm starting a new one. But we basically sent out a brochure to all the schools, and it took 1 or 2 years. The first year we had 4 schools that came. The second year we had 17 schools. The third year we had 20. And now we have 35 groups that come per year, and we're fully booked within 3 weeks of opening up our bookings. So it's word of mouth, and the teachers, when they come to Nadit, they realize that by bringing their kids to the center, they are having not only a fun educational program, but they are teaching their kids life skills, they're teaching them teamwork. They get to do a lot of science experiments that they would not be able to do in the classroom. So a lot of teachers have realized this and come back year and year again and see an improvement in the marks that the kids have at school.
Is your weather the same all year?
The question was if the weather is the same. There's sunshine all year long, but the temperature is not. So I don't know, maybe in some of the pictures you saw kids wearing jackets and hats. Yeah, so we basically, our school year is from January until December. Our winter is ending now, so we are now going into spring. In the summertime, the temperatures are scorching hot, but in the winter times, it's cold. And what we do not have is climate control. You know, in the United States, we have climate control. So whatever it is outside, it doesn't matter. You come inside and you know it's going to be this temperature.
But is there like a rainy season where you can't do your classes, or?
We just close in December and January because that's when in Namibia everybody goes on holiday, and I say holiday, vacation, and people go home. They don't, you know, here in the States, people actually go to summer camp in the summertime, but in the Namibian summertime, people go back to their villages and communities where they came from. So that's the only time, and we do operate in the rainy season. It's just out of that, when I say we've had a lot of rain, it means that it's rained, you know, 15 days. And not just 3.
But I mean, you have to change your activities for the rainy season. You have to teach some slightly different.
We do change it a little bit, but it's really out of the 35 programs we have, it's maybe 2 programs that are affected by it, and then we just adjust on that particular day.
Yes.
Every single day. Every single person in the world. Oh, sorry. The question is whether or not I've run into people who resist change for cultural reasons. So, I throw the question right back at you, and how often everybody in the world around us resists change. We don't actually like it very much. So, but in Namibia, it's the same thing. And it's one of the reasons why it's important to us that we continue to work with the same schools, that kids come back, they already know, oh, we're going to go to Nadit, and that kids can then talk about and try to change things together on a whole school level or on a community level.
Yes, in the back row.
Do you have any way to follow up with your students and see if they actually do take those behaviors home with them?
Not as much as we would like. We just are too small. So we've tried to start following up with just having this outreach program that we've now started, where we've gone to communities to go and visit what's going on. We've had a couple of students, master's students from overseas, who've done some studies. But it's definitely an area where we would appreciate assistance from the outside, where people could do research on actually how much is being implemented.
You're talking to a master's student who just came back from Africa, having done some evaluation of guide programs. So
great, well, you should share your research with us.
Other questions? Carolyn?
I just wondered about the language. You said that Afrikaans and English were very prevalent. Do people also speak a tribal language?
Yeah, so the question was about languages. Absolutely. So most Namibians speak 3 to 4 languages. So their mother tongue, which is usually, as you say, a tribal language, an indigenous language. In the south of Namibia, it's mostly Nama, which is a Klik language, and I cannot speak any of it. Unfortunately, my tongue is not very good. But otherwise, people speak Afrikaans and English, and they usually can understand 2 or 3 other indigenous languages. And at the center, we basically have the philosophy, if the national government has English as the main language in school, although a lot of the kids may not always understand it, that's what we will use as our medium of instruction. And we try to help as much as possible. We ask teachers to translate if we need extra translation. We had these. We have many community groups that come to us as well, where English is definitely not spoken. So there we have a lot of translation that happens. And actually, it's part of the program. It makes it fun that people who do understand then have an opportunity to be a teacher. And that's really what we want them to do, is because then they go back to the community and they already feel empowered that they have the authority to speak about solar cooking to somebody else.
Other questions? Marion?
You had mentioned the importance of the social ritual of the barbecues. Have they been, the folks that start using the social cookers, are they then applying that same ritual to using the solar cookers, or has it changed all that?
Not at all. So I think really where the solar cooker is going to fit in. In the beginning, when I first started Nadit, I of course had this as a dream, but I would say that hasn't been successful at all. So I think the solar cooker plays a role in that it can be one of the ways that people cook. So if you are cooking using firewood and have to go 10 kilometers to collect your wood, and you now use it for all of your cooking, it won't last very long. So my theory is use a solar cooker during the day for everything that's not important, and save the wood for important events.
Another question over here. Yes, on the side.
I was just curious, kind of, what you guys are doing is incredibly important for really, like, low way of sustainable village. But do you ever feel that us in the developed world are the ones that really agree with the most?
My mother would agree with you. She would like me to come back.
Again, repeat the question.
Oh, sorry. The question is whether or not the people in the developed world need this education more. So. Yeah, and I think that's actually part of what the what UNESCO is working on with the Education for Sustainable Development. And interestingly enough, through that network that I'm now a part of, the United States was one of the least represented people. And I don't know if that's just because of within the United States, there's so much already happening here that when it comes to global events, there's not as much interaction. But we should have a Nadit Center in every single region of every single part of the world. Do you want to start one?
Other questions? Yes.
Would you speak a little bit about the relationship between Nadit and governmental units, local government, larger governmental units within Namibia? Are they supportive, resistant? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. So the question is about what is our relationship with different types of government within Namibia, local, national, and so on. So to be honest, when we very started Nadit, we actually wrote a letter to the Ministry of Education in our region and asked them for support. And the person who was running the ministry at that time wrote me a letter back and said, "We don't support your efforts." And I thought, okay. And I found out later on that he didn't support it because there is another environmental education center in the further south than where we are that he helped start. So he saw it as competition, rightfully so. But the reality is it shouldn't be competition, actually, you know, and there should be that space. So when I first started with the work of Nadit, I did not look for approval after that letter. I said, you know what, I'm just going to do my work, we're going to get on with it, and eventually either it's going to fall apart and it won't work and nobody will like it, or we're going to get the support that we need. And we are right now at a stage where actually, a lot of government knows about Nadit. They know they should support us. But Education for Sustainable Development, nobody knows where to put it. They don't know if it's education, if it's environment, if it's under the Ministry of Environment and Tourism, or, you know, should, so they don't, so nobody's taking ownership, and that's a little bit the problem that we have right now in Namibia, is that nobody's really willing to do that. So our main support does now come from the Ministry of Education. They provide the bus, which also costs them a lot of money. They're transporting a lot of school kids back and forth. And we have wide recognition, but nobody else is in the position where they are giving us money, for example.
I'm reminded of the Lincoln Public Schools has a curriculum requirement, I guess, for fourth graders to discover the prairie. So they get opportunities to visit some of the prairies in the neighborhood, like Spring Creek or Pioneers Park. I'm just wondering if there's, when you have that kind of support with the Department of Education in your country, is there a movement or a groundswell maybe where something in the government curriculum for youngsters going through the system, I don't know how comparable it is, but are there opportunities to develop that need or place it in a way that's sustainable for you?
Yeah, I think it, yeah, it's hard for me to repeat that question. I think the question is within the Ministry of Education and the curriculum. Environmental education is considered a cross-curriculum subject, and so therefore it's left up to the teachers and the schools of how well they implement it. So one of the arguments would be that actually we should be spending more time teaching teachers rather than teaching the students directly in order to enable them to be teaching more kids in the future. So it is already there. There is space for it. But even with that, the Namibian government has so many challenges. We don't even have enough schools for kids. So environmental education financially is at the bottom of the ladder. And that's, you know, it's actually a very similar question. There is lots of support for NADEET and for environmental education. It just doesn't have money behind it.
Anyone else? Yes, yes, okay, please.
And part of it is that sand color. Uh-huh. It must be the minerals in the sand. It's just the most beautiful color.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, and you said it was the most beautiful desert in the world. You know, my other comment kind of ties onto someone else's question. You know, those of us who live in more developed countries, who we are making the goods that come to a developing country, and you were talking about how it just gets thrown out or burned. We somehow have to take responsibility for how we package those things we give to people and what happens. I mean, there's some responsibility on our part. I know what you're trying to do is to help people understand they can't just throw out or burn. But there's some responsibility for us too, I think.
Yeah. I agree with you on both points.
Yeah.
On the first issue of the sand, I actually brought some with me. So after the talk, you can go to the table in the back and touch it for yourself. And I wanted to bring some grass for you, Rick, but you're not allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have been stopped at the border.
I'll come collect it.
Okay, that's much better. But every single time we've traveled with our sand, actually the transport custom and border guys have inspected our luggage. So it doesn't go well through the x-ray machines. Yeah, and I think also the second point about the fact that really it is everybody's responsibility to do something. And I think one of the reasons, I mean, NADEET is a place that in Namibia speaks to not just people who come from rural areas who don't have a lot of money, but we also have private schools that come to our center. And they have exactly similar issues that are in the United States. Every single child comes to the center with their cell phone, and we luckily don't have reception. So then I don't have to deal with telling them to put their cell phones away, you know, and have laws and rules about all of that. And so this is one of the things where, you know, as Namibia grows and develops, it's also the responsibility within the country that people are developing at, and it's not that this gap is not growing. So.
I just wanted to make a comment that I know this came through in the talk, but the two times that I visited Nadeet, the thing that I came away remembering most was, but in both cases, there were primary groups who were at Nadeet, and the kids are so excited about what they're doing. They are just, they're giggling, they're full of energy, they're running around, they're doing all these things. This is not hard work to do this stuff. They are just so excited about what they do, and of course that gives so much energy to the whole place. If you do, I know some of you have visited Namibia and some have visited Nadeet, and if you have a chance, it's an absolutely once-in-a-lifetime wonderful opportunity to go see this. So let's thank Victoria for being here.